Red Eye is a program of alternative politics and culture which broadcasts live from 9 until noon every Saturday morning on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM and around the world at cooperadio.org. Here's Lorraine Chisholm.
Last week, Paul Martin appointed a new ambassador to the United States. Frank McKenna was New Brunswick Premier for a decade from 1987 to 1997 and seriously considered taking a run at the federal Liberal leadership in 2003 before deciding to endorse Mr. Martin. McKenna moved from politics to law and to the corporate boardrooms of big business. The appointment is cause for careful scrutiny, according to Steve Staples of the Polaris Institute. He points to McKenna's participation in the powerful Carlyle Group, which has connections to the arms industry, and to the Saudi Bin Laden Group. Steve is well known to Vancouverites from his time at the Council of Canadians here, and he now lives in Ottawa, where he's the director of the Project on Corporate Security State at the Polaris Institute. Hi, Steve.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
Oh, just fine, thanks.
Now, most of us know McKenna from his time as Premier of New Brunswick, and I know that's the area you hail from. Can you refresh our memory on his record there?
Well, he was, as you said, 10 years he was the Premier there. I lived in New Brunswick during that time, and of course he came into power with winning every seat in the province, completely eliminating the Conservatives at the time. And, you know, he was firmly ensconced, I think, fairly early on in, you know, what we could describe as the business side of the Liberal Party, if you want, for more the right-wing end of the party, as opposed to the what we describe as the more social liberals. His time in New Brunswick, I think, foreshadowed a lot of the way, the direction that the Liberals went in the 1990s. There was draconian cuts to service programs, healthcare, welfare, all kinds of things during his early years there. And in fact, New Brunswick is always seen as a bit of a social experimenting ground. As well, he was in favor of free trade when the federal party was opposed to free trade. So he was very firmly ensconced in the business side of the Liberal Party. And when he left politics in 1997, he moved on, like many politicians do, into a legal and business career. I think he's never met a corporate board that he didn't like. He serves on at least 9 of them, including Air Canada, General Motors, and others, which have probably made him a millionaire. Now, the Toronto Star said that he's probably in the million-dollar-a-year club in New Brunswick. So I think that that is where he has been over the last few years, surrounding himself by the power brokers in Bay Street until you know, he put his political aspirations on hold, as you mentioned, and now he's off to Washington to represent us there.
Now, I understand one of the business group or corporate group that he's involved with, that he's an advisor to, is the Carlyle Group. Tell us who the Carlyle Group is.
Well, we first became aware of Frank McKenna's connection to the Carlyle Group back in 2002 when we got a call from a journalist in New Brunswick who phoned us and said, you know, Frank McKenna is organizing a golf game with 200 CEOs here in Moncton, and the guest of honor is George Bush Sr., and it's sponsored by this thing called the Carlyle Group. Who's the Carlyle Group? And that began our research into the organization, and there was a real trove of information there. They are now an $18.9 billion private equity investment firm in Washington. What they do is, you know, it's kind of like a takeover fund. They also have venture funds, but they specialize in taking over distressed companies. They put their own people on the board of directors. They sort of strip it of its valuable assets, concentrate on that, build up the value, and then sell it. And then this, in return, pays a dividend back to all of the wealthy investors that have put money into the Carlyle Group. Now, what's interesting about Carlyle is who heads it. It's chair for many years. He's now the chairman emeritus, as he describes it, is Frank Carlucci, Now, Carlucci was Ronald Reagan's defense secretary. He's a former deputy director of the CIA, and he has surrounded himself by power brokers from the Pentagon, the CIA, and the White House. George Bush Sr. has served on an advisory board to the Carlyle Group, and he was when he played golf with Frank McKenna back in 2002. Also, James Baker, Bush's Secretary of State, is in a capacity there. We also have John Major, former Prime Minister of the UK. Fidel Ramos was there as well, and a whole other B string of people, equally influential but maybe not so publicly known. So many that the Manchester Guardian called the Carlyle Group the ex-president's club. The investments that they have, probably not surprising, given who is on the leadership, are in areas that are highly regulated by the government or are winning contracts, survive on contracts. So this is an area where fortunes are made and lost with the stroke of a pen in Washington. So you're looking at the defense industry, the aerospace industry, telecommunications, energy, private health care delivery. And so this is where, you know, the Carlyle Group kind of brings in its air of, it's been a magnet of controversy. A lot of people remember the Carlyle Group from Michael Moore's film, Fahrenheit 9/11, and focusing, I think, at that point on their most well-known arms industry company, United Defense, which was actually the fifth largest contractor to the U.S. Army at one point. They sold it this year, but that's one of their most high-profile investments is United Defense.
Now, it sounds like a real powerful group of U.S. insiders, and you mentioned John Major as well. Now, I understand that there's a perception that part of their success is due to that kind of insider connection. Can you draw that out for us?
Well, sure. I think that the perception is this, that because they invest in areas that are either highly regulated by the government or survive on military contracts mostly, that the people on the on their advisory board either have inside information or are able to influence decisions. I mean, as Chuck Lewis said, who's a government watchdog in the U.S., he said, you know, it was the first time that the president's father served on the board of one of the largest arms makers in the United States. So the influence and connections and possibility of insider influence and information is quite surprising. Now, let me give you an example of a typical investment that they would make. Global Crossing had a number of fiber optic cables laid all across the Pacific, and it got into trouble along with all the other dot-coms. It was also implicated in bad financial practices, possibly illegal ones. It fell apart. Carlyle Group actually had some dealings with Global Crossing, but later on they came in and they snapped up a company called WCI Cable, which owns a $300 million fiber optic link connecting Alaska to the continental United States. It actually runs out under the ocean floor, or on the ocean floor, rather. They bought it for $29 million, $300 million asset for $29 million, just in time for the U.S. to start setting up its missile defense system, which will be using these fiber optic cables to communicate between the missile interceptors in Alaska and the control centers in the continental United States. And that's the kind of investment, and that's why people think there's something fishy going on about the Carlyle Group. The other aspect is it's a private private equity investment firm, which, due to accounting laws, they don't require the same kind of disclosure that publicly traded companies would. They mostly invest in privately held companies. So this adds to the air of secrecy, of influence, and insider knowledge that makes the Carlyle Group a magnet for controversy.
And to come back to Frank McKenna then, what kind of involvement has he had with the Carlyle Group? You mentioned the close relationship with George Bush Sr., but does he have a formal relationship with them as well?
He does. Frank McKenna, as we learned in 2002, was on the Canadian Advisory Board. What the Carlyle Group has done is they've set up advisory boards in Europe and in Asia and, of course, in the U.S., and they set up a Canadian advisory group, according to Frank McKenna, about 5 years ago, and he was on it. Other people, other familiar names, Peter Lougheed, the former premier of Alberta, Paul Desmarais from Power Corporation, Laurent Baudouin from Bombardier, Alan Gottlieb, former Canadian ambassador to the United States, so another power broker in line very much with the other names that we've discussed, are setting up the Canadian Advisory Board of the Carlyle Group. And I have to underscore, Frank McKenna, he's not, the name, an advisory board, it sounds like, he's just called on to give his 2 cents in an email once in a while. That's not the case. There are, the Carlyle Group says that all of their advisors and board members are remunerated for their service. And McKenna has organized not just this golf game, but other meetings on behalf of the Carlyle Group to help either raise money for the funds or, as he says, encourage investment in Canada. But it's a double role. They're always looking for investors to put money into their funds, which they in turn use to invest in arms companies and other aerospace companies and what other investments they might be interested in. So Frank has played a very active role and has built a close relationship with the Bush family during his time there, and the real power brokers and the most hawkish elements of the Republican Party are on Frank McKenna's Rolodex.
I want to kind of bring in another family here because you mentioned the Bush family and this kind of connection here with Frank McKenna. But I think one of the other things that has been exposed with the Carlyle Group is their relationship with the Saudi Bin Laden Group. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, as again, this was brought in the in Michael Moore's film, so people will remember this. The special flights out for Osama bin Laden's estranged family. Now, the Saudi bin Laden Group is a $5 billion construction firm in Saudi Arabia. It's run by Osama bin Laden's family. I think it was actually created by his father. And Osama is, they say, has no longer any connections with the family, hasn't for many years. I mean, some people have drawn questions to that, whether how distant that actually is. But it is generally agreed that the more work would have to be done to put a direct connection, but at least the estranged family of Osama bin Laden has been an investor in the Carlyle Group. They had started off with a $2 million investment in the 1990s, but a close friend said that soon ballooned from there. They had invested in the fund, in fact, that owned United Defense, the tank manufacturer I mentioned earlier. And were investors right up until 2001, when on September 11th, just coincidentally, Carlyle Group was having a meeting in Washington, D.C., and the Bin Laden family were there in Washington on September 11th, and they were hustled out, as was documented in Michael Moore's film. It took 6 weeks, really, for Carlyle Group to actually break the links with the Bin Laden family after September 11th. So the Wall Street Journal started doing a series of articles uncovering the connections between the Bin Laden family and George Bush. So they finally made those links after, in fact, that Osama bin Laden was a known terrorist for quite a while, even before September 11th. But and of course Frank McKenna was part of the organization during this entire period and leading up to it. And in our report, we said, wow, this really is a question of judgment, I think, here on Frank McKenna's part, that he would even continue to be associated with a group like this that had any connection at all with the Bin Laden family.
Okay, so the record that you're describing for Frank McKenna obviously shows these like incredible kind of high-level connections with these very powerful business groups. Now, for the corporate press, they might look at that and say, well, that's a great qualification for being an ambassador to the U.S. because they want to kind of increase the ties with the U.S. and have more cooperation. So why is it that this should alarm us or make us concerned about Frank McKenna's appointment?
Well, you're right. The corporate press, when his name was first leaked as the possible next Canadian ambassador to the United States, the corporate media did start listing off all his board associations. So this is great. He's well connected with people in Washington. And we said, well connected with who? Armed dealers and guys connected to the CIA? What good is that for us? I mean, does the average Canadian want our ambassador to have? Are we looking for those kinds of connections? So I think it raised a number of questions about one. What are let's back up a bit. The Prime Minister, I think there's some questions for him, too, because this is a unique appointment in terms of usually it's a seasoned diplomat who takes this post. Prime Minister Martin is signaling that now there's going to be much closer political ties between the U.S. between the Canadian ambassador to the United States and the Prime Minister's office. The ambassador is going to play a more active role in defining the policy and shaping the relationship with the United States. So I think we have to ask some hard questions about, well, what kind of influence will a guy like Frank McKenna bring to this post? We asked the question. It seems that his only experience in dealing with the United States is seeing it as a business deal. In defending his role in the Carlyle Group, he has made statements defending the arms industry, legitimizing it as a proper way to develop an economy. He has no problems with being connected to these arms manufacturers. He has no problems being connected to the powerful elements of the Republican Party in the United States. And we said, if he's playing this role in our report, we asked, is he going to be able to represent the views of all Canadians, or is he just going to represent a perspective that's shaped from Bay Street and corporate connections there? I think we need to know a lot more about Frank McKenna.
Mm. And these aren't small issues in terms of especially over the last couple of years, with kind of increasing focus, American focus on security, and Paul Martin saying, well, yeah, we want to cooperate with you on security. These seem like major issues for Canadians in terms of where our relationship with the U.S. goes.
Absolutely, there is a great divide, I think, in the country right now, in terms of attitudes towards the United States. Any issue that seems to come up kind of falls down in two ways. On the one hand, you have the business community led by the Canadian Council of Chief Executives and the CD Howe Institute, Fraser Institute, all pushing for greater integration with the United States, economic and security, joint missile defense, they argue, help support the war on terrorism, harmonize our border programs. But then there's this other big group of people, mostly the Canadian public, that says, look, we think George Bush is a terrible threat to world peace. We want to maintain our independence and create our own distinct identity and a unique foreign policy. And so that's the two dichotomies. So where is Paul Martin? Where is Frank McKenna moving in that direction? Clearly, it's along the deeper integration, the business view of making assurances to the United States that we are going to help contribute to the war on terrorism. I mean, let's look at the big issue that's going to come up in missile defense. You know, this has become sort of emblematic issue of this debate of closer relationships to the Bush administration. What we can find of Frank McKenna's record on these issues, we did find a speech that he gave to the Canadian Law Association, where he said, I have no problem with greater security cooperation with the United States. He has no problem with that. He combined that with the arms industry, and I think we're getting a signal from the Prime Minister that Frank McKenna is going to go down there and help win military contracts for our participation in missile defense. And that's very worrisome.
Final question, Steve. Is it a done deal?
It's a done deal, I think, yes. And this is what's really appalling, is that the Prime Minister made a point dealing with the Democratic deficit during his campaign for leadership, saying that he would allow major appointments, including ambassadorial appointments, to be reviewed by the proper parliamentary committee before the appointment was made, before the final decision was made. The committee wouldn't be able to stop the appointment, but there would be a hearing similar to what we've seen with Condoleezza Rice recently in the United States, where parliamentarians get a chance to question the person, question the candidate. The Prime Minister has reneged on that. He is going to Washington. He'll assume the post on March 1st. I think we will see Frank McKenna appear before the Foreign Affairs Committee. He will have to, I think, at some point answer questions, as he had during the last few days here, about his connections to the Carlyle Group, his views on missile defense, the arms industry, and the whole lot. And I think Canadians should watch that very carefully.
Thanks for joining me this morning, Steve. It's great to talk to you again.
My pleasure.
Okay, thanks, you take care.
Me. Okay.
Bye-bye. I've been speaking with Steve Staples of the Polaris Institute. Steve is also the founder of ceasefire.ca.
You've been listening to Red Eye, a program produced by an alternative media collective in Vancouver, Canada. Red Eye broadcasts live every Saturday morning from 9 until noon and can be heard around the world at cooperadio.org.